Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopijana Malava Kiribadadhati Gopijana Malabha Giribharadhari Yashodanandanam Rajajananjana Yashodanandanam Rajajana Ranjana Yamunatira Vanachari Yamunatira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari Gopijana Banabak Giribharadhari Gopijana Balabha Giribharadhari Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamunatira Vanachari Yamunatira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravidikacharya also Tara Satishi Shimad. His Divine Grace Abhayachalanada Bhaktivananda Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopakabala Sayam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavanam Ki Jai, Mathuram Ki Jai, Jagannathaswami Ki Jai, Yamunamayi Ki Jai, Srimati Lalasidevi Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is to Sri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ma Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasadaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachani Nivasesa Sunyavadi Paschatate Shatari. So Om Gana Timirandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, who has so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So we'll continue with our study of Srimad Bhagavad Gita. And we are on the second chapter in text 45. Here we go. And this is also another famous verse. Actually, this chapter is filled with famous verses that Srila Prabhupada quoted quite often. And this verse in particular is very important for those who are, let's say, Vedic scholars or those who come from India and know something about the Vedas. So let's start. And this verse talks about the Vedic literatures. Hold on a second. Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nishtrigunyo Bhavarjuna Nirdvandvo Nichasatvaksto Niryogakshema Atmavan. So the synonyms. Trigunya, pertaining to the three modes of material nature. Vishaya, on the subject matter, Vedaha, Vedic literatures. Nistrigunya, transcendental to the three modes of material nature. Bhava, be. Arjuna, or Arjuna. Nirdvandva, without duality. Let me just change this. It's better. Nityasattvastha, in a pure state of spiritual existence. Niryogakshema, free from ideas of gain and protection. Atmavan, established in the self. Translation, the Vedas deal mainly with the subject of the three modes of material nature. O Arjuna, become transcendental to these three modes, be free from all dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety, and be established in the self. So Srila Prabhupada's purport. All material activities involve actions and reactions in the three modes of material nature. They are meant for fruitive results. That means you get something for it, which cause bondage, that's karma, in the material world. The Vedas deal mostly with fruitive activities to gradually elevate the general public from the field of sense gratification to a position on the transcendental plane. Arjuna, as a student and friend of Lord Krishna, is advised to raise himself to the transcendental position of Vedanta philosophy, where in the beginning there is Brahma Jigyasa, that means knowledge of spirit, or questions on the supreme transcendence. All the living entities who are in the material world are struggling very hard for existence. For them, the Lord, after creation of the material world, gave the Vedic wisdom advising how to live and get rid of material entanglement. When the activities for sense gratification, namely the Karma Kanda chapter, are finished, then the chances for spiritual realization is offered in the form of the Upanishads, which are part of different Vedas, as the Bhagavad Gita is a part of the fifth Veda, namely the Mahabharata. The Upanishads mark the beginning of transcendental life. As long as the material body exists, there are actions and reactions in the material modes. One has to learn tolerance in the face of dualities such as happiness and distress, or cold and warmth, and by tolerating such dualities, become free from anxieties regarding gain and loss. This transcendental position is achieved in full Krishna consciousness when one is fully dependent on the goodwill of Krishna. So this needs some explaining. As far as the Vedas are concerned, the word Veda, of course, means knowledge. It's a generic term. And the word Vedanta means the conclusion or the end goal of all knowledge. But generally, when we talk about Vedas, we are talking about the books of knowledge that were written or spoken by Krishna and great sages that have been coming from India, that were originally in Sanskrit. Of course, wider definition of the word Veda, we can also refer to the commentaries given by the great saints and sages throughout the years, because these commentaries are as good as the Vedas, and they're part of the Vedas in a real sense, maybe not part in the traditional sense, but they're part in the real sense because they actually contain the same information. You know, things equal to the same thing or equal to each other. So let's go back and talk about the traditional understanding of Vedas or the Veda in India. So you have, originally it's described, there was one Veda, and that Veda was divided into four branches because people were less intelligent. And that's those four, older branches were the Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva Veda. The Rig Veda is a Veda of hymns, basically four karma kanja stuff, which is mentioned here, like getting better things in this world. The Yajurveda is a Veda that describes different types of sacrifices, which also are meant for that particular purpose, getting better things in this world. The Atharva Veda is actually dealing with different, weapons, curses, and mantras that you can accomplish different things with. And the Samaveda is the Veda basically of music, or rhythm, music, how to chant the hymns and everything like that. So anyway, there's more to it than that. So you have these four Vedas which were expanded from the original Veda. And then after that, these are called the Shrutis, these four Vedas. And then you have the Smritis. Shruti means to hear. Smriti means to remember. And Smritis are such literatures. Of course, Shruti, also the Upanishads sometimes are considered Shruti too. Upanishad means to come closer. Basically come closer to the source of knowledge, which is Krishna, and in addition, the spiritual master. And then after the Upanishads, you have the Vedanta Sutra, and the Vedanta Sutras, they actually are basically commentaries in code, very short, pithy statements, code form that are commentaries on the Upanishads. And then after that, you have other literatures like what's called the Itihasas and Puranas, the histories and the Puranas, which are very dealing with ancient times. Puranas deal with the goal of life, and the Itihasas deal also with the goal of life, but particularly the pastimes. The two main Puranas or histories are the Ramayana and the Mahabharata. So this is a vast literature. And if you look at the literature and you're not really trained up to understand what's happening when you look at the literature, you'll think it's just like so variegated, there's no unity to it. That's what you think. And of course, that's mentioned in the Mahabharata. That one cannot understand, Tarko Pratishtha, Shruti Na, Vibina. The Vedas are so multi-branched that you can't understand the purpose of them simply by studying them. Only by, there's this other statement, how you can understand the purpose, Mahajaniyena Gatasapanta, by approaching a great pure devotee, or literally it says following in the footsteps of great devotees. And that means approaching and learning from a great devotee. You can try to understand the purpose of the Vedic literatures and why there are so many different types, multi-branch Vedic literatures, because there has to be something for everyone depending on what platform they are in approaching Krishna. You know, some people just like our Bhogaishvarya Prasaktanam, that was the previous verse we read yesterday, that they're just interested in opulent life and enjoying and everything like that. So Krishna gives them something to help them connect with him in spite of their desires. So you have these preliminary injunctions, which is called the karma kanja section of the Vedas. And then, you know, people get a little frustrated with this world, then they look at the jnana kanda section, which deals with knowledge of spirit, but not precisely Krishna consciousness, but preliminary knowledge of spirit before you get to Krishna consciousness. And then there's Upasana Kanda, which deals with worship, and particularly with worship of Krishna. And so the topmost of those literatures is called the Bhagavatam, which is the postgraduate study of the science of Krishna, science of God. And Bhagavad Gita is like the undergraduate study. And another literature called the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada considered to be the postgraduate study of God consciousness. So here you have all these literatures, and by Prabhupada's mercy, we can understand the purpose of the Vedas. In fact, even Krishna states the purpose of the Vedas in 15th chapter of the Gita, text 15. Vedaischas are there. Aham eva Vedo, that by all the Vedas I am to be known. So in other words, that's why there's so many different Vedic literatures. Now, the reason Krishna is making reference to all these different Vedic literatures is that Arjuna's excuses, or some of his excuses, were actually based upon Arjuna's references to preliminary Vedic literatures, things that didn't apply, because different literatures apply in different circumstances. Like if you go into a pharmacy, different medicines apply to different people who are in different circumstances of health or circumstances of sickness. So this is practical. The Vedas are like a pharmacopoeia, and you have to understand which is the right one for you in the progressive path, and which is the ultimate goal in the progressive path, and that's understood by approaching a spiritual master. And Srila Prabhupada has very kindly let us know about these things. So now we'll go to text 46. Yavanartha hudapane sarvatasam pluto dake tavan sarveshu vedeshu ramanasya vijanataha. Yavan, all that artha is meant, udapane, in a well of water, sarvataha, in all respects, sambhuta udake, in a great reservoir of water, tavan, similarly, sarveshu, in all vedeshu, Vedic literature, brahmanasya, of the man who knows the supreme Brahman, vijanataha, who is in complete knowledge. So all purposes served by a small well can at once be served by a great reservoir of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served to one who knows the purpose behind them. So anyway, this is, what's that Sanskrit verse? Yasmin vigate sarvameva vigatam bhavati. One who knows Krishna knows everything. Now, what does that mean? That means one who knows the purpose of everything knows everything. You don't have to know like the little details. For example, the purpose of my car is to take me to a place. I don't have to know, although I do know, how the engine functions. Not necessary. Because I'm the knower of the car, I can use the car. And Prabhupada said, that's actually higher intelligence rather than learning all the details of how things work. You know, generally we're concerned with how, what, when. But actually in spiritual life, the why, which is called, the study of why is called teleology, teleos. So the why is actually the most important thing. So if you know what the Vedas are meant for, the purpose, then you know the whole Vedas. And you don't have to go studying all these hundreds and hundreds of volumes and learning all these hymns and becoming an expert in Sanskrit. There's one story that Srila Prabhupada told, and actually Lord Chaitanya told it, Prabhupada was repeating it, of a devotee who had been told by his spiritual master to read the Bhagavad Gita, although he was quite illiterate. So every day he was reading the Bhagavad Gita, and he was crying when he was reading the Bhagavad Gita. Lord Chaitanya came to him and said, you know, why are you crying when you read the Bhagavad Gita? And the man said, I'm illiterate and really, you know, I can't really understand what's happening here, but I'm understanding that Krishna has become the chariot driver of Arjuna, and I'm thinking how wonderful that is, understanding the relationship, the reciprocal relationship between the Lord and the devotees, where the Lord actually serves his devotees and the devotee is giving the Lord instructions. And Lord Chaitanya said, you're the real knower of the Bhagavad Gita. So we find sometimes people who can recite so many verses from the Bhagavad Gita or from Vedic literatures and just throw verses at you. But one who knows the purpose and is acting according to the purpose is the real knower of the Vedic literatures. Because if you know the postgraduate stuff, you don't have to learn the undergraduate stuff. Yeah, it's practical. It's practical. I mean, why would you? I mean, like Einstein. Okay, here's someone. Like Einstein, brilliant personality. But Einstein could not even remember his phone number. So you can say, well, he's pretty stupid. No. because he was absorbed in higher truths. And I'm sure he had some body, or he wrote down the phone number. So, purport. The rituals and sacrifices mentioned in the Karmakanda division of the Vedic literature, and I said the Karmakanda is meant to give you material upliftment, are meant to encourage gradual development of self-realization. And the purpose of self-realization is clearly stated in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 15:15, which I just quoted. The purpose of studying the Vedas is to know Lord Krishna, the primeval cause of everything. So self-realization means understanding Krishna and one's eternal relationship with him. So to realize yourself, you have to understand what you are. It's a tautology. And what you are is part and parcel of Krishna. You can't have self-realization without Krishna realization. And once you have Krishna realization, you automatically have self-realization. Everybody understands that? So in other words, Krishna realization is necessary and sufficient, to use logical terms, for self-realization. Got it? Very good. The relationship of the living entity with Krishna is also mentioned in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita in the 7th text of the 15th chapter. The living entities are parts and parcels of Krishna. Therefore, revival of Krishna consciousness by the individual living entity is the highest perfectional stage of Vedic knowledge. This is confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 3rd canto, text 33, in chapter 33, text 7. Aho vata swa pachato gariyan ya jiva gari bhakti de nam atubhyam de pustapaste jehuva sashnararya ramanuchar nama granti ye te. O my Lord, a person who is chanting your holy name, although born of a low family like that of a chandala, dog eater, is situated on the highest platform of self-realization. Such a person must have performed all kinds of penances and sacrifices according to Vedic rituals and studied the Vedic literatures many, many times after taking his bath in all the holy places of pilgrimage. Such a person is considered to be the best of the Aryan family. Remember, Aryan is someone who's high class. It's not a racial designation. So, in other words, if you're chanting the Lord's holy names, then automatically you've achieved the highest status. Why is that? Very easy. Nam namakari bahuda nijasarva shaktish. As Lord Chaitanya describes, Krishna has put all of his potency in the holy names. All of his potency. And by contacting the holy names, you're associating with God. When you're associated with God, your spiritual qualities come out. Can't get higher than that. So one must be intelligent enough to understand the purpose of the Vedas without being attached to the rituals only, and must not desire to be elevated to the heavenly kingdoms for a better quality of sense gratification, like going to Hawaii. Actually, talking about sense, okay, let's talk about happiness for a second. Happiness. People want to be happy. But the point is, if you are not Krishna conscious, let's put Krishna consciousness aside for a second, your happiness is preordained how much happiness you're going to have. So no matter how much money you have, no matter where you go, you will have the same happiness, the same distress. And if you are Krishna conscious, no matter where you go, you will have the greatest happiness. That's why it's said about a great devotee, Narayana Purak, Sarvena Kashchana Bibiti Swargapavarga Apavarga Narakeshu Apituliyartha Darshana, that Tamas devotee can go to heaven, go to hell, he can take birth and not take birth, go back to Godhead. He sees all these places as the same, because Kevalananda Kanda is always happy, even if he's in hell, because he's not going to be tortured in hell. It's like if I visit a prisoner to preach to him, I'm not a prisoner, I'm just visiting. Everybody understand that? I used to do prison preaching many times before I got busy doing other things. And I would go into the prison and try to give the prisoners Krishna consciousness. And I would walk in, walk out. So I was in the prison, but not part of the prison. Very interesting. So therefore, a devotee can be anywhere, and he's absorbed in the happiness. The happiness is inside, not out here. It's really not out there. It's inside, in the heart. Okay? It is not possible for the common man in this age to follow all the rules and regulations of the Vedic rituals, nor is it possible to study all the Vedanta and Upanishads thoroughly. It requires much time, energy, knowledge, and resources to execute the purpose of the Vedas. This is hardly possible in this age. The best purpose of Vedic culture is served, however, by chanting the holy name of the Lord as recommended by Lord Chaitanya, the deliverer of all fallen souls. When Lord Chaitanya was asked by a great Vedic scholar, Prakashananda Saraswati, why he, the Lord, was chanting the holy name of the Lord like a sentimentalist instead of studying Vedanta philosophy, the Lord replied that his spiritual master had found him to be a great fool and thus asked him to chant the holy name of Lord Krishna. He did so and became ecstatic like a madman. So this, of course, is something that Lord Chaitanya told these impersonalists or Mayavadis in Benares. He was in their assembly and he wanted to preach to them, but he understood he had to be a little bit indirect in the beginning. So when he entered into their assembly, in the initial time he entered their assembly, he just sat down near the foot washing place. And he manifested an effulgence, like many, many suns, 10,000 suns. And they thought, wow, he's become God, even though he is God. They thought, you know, he's achieved Brahman. They thought he achieved Mayavadi and personal liberation. And they brought him to a respectable sitting place, this Prakashananda Saraswati, and he asked them, you know, I can see you've achieved a very high status, but tell me, why do you dance and chant with low-class people instead of studying Vedanta? And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as sort of a preaching tool or a trick, said to him, my spiritual master said, I'm not qualified to study Vedanta, just chant Hare Krishna. And he said, I've begun to chant Hare Krishna, I'm feeling great ecstasy, rolling on the ground in ecstasy and everything like that. And I went back to my guru and asked my guru, what kind of mantra did you give me, Guru Maharaj? And his guru said, I'm very pleased you've achieved perfection. Because everything is there. Nija Sarva Shaktish. What does that mean? All the energy, everything is there in Krishna's holy name. As Krishna says, also in the Gita, Aham Sarvasya Prabhu, that everything comes from Krishna. So when you're connected to the source, then you don't have to connect so much to the emanations. For example, if I go to the main powerhouse, hopefully it's not an atomic energy powerhouse, I don't and get my energy from there, whatever. Then I don't have to worry about anything else. I'm going to the source of all the energy. So if you're going to the goal of the Vedic literature is connecting with Krishna, because all the purpose of the Vedic literature is to get you to chant Hare Krishna. So if you're already doing it, then what's the use? I mean, like the purpose of going to business school is so you can make money. Or if you're not so intelligent, you'll teach at the university, but they still make money. But if you're making money, tons of money, what do you need to go to business school for? Doesn't make sense. You know, if you can hire, all right, here's an example. Let's say you're studying for your MBA or something like that. I think most of you know what that is. But you're in charge of a company that hires MBAs. Then why do you need to become an MBA? It just doesn't make sense. Don't waste your time, you know. So you got Krishna, you got everything. One who has Krishna has everything. So anyway, so in this age of Kali, most of the population is foolish and not adequately educated to understand Vedanta philosophy. The best purpose of Vedanta philosophy is served by inoffensively chanting the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna. Vedanta is the last word in Vedic wisdom. In fact, that's what the word Vedanta means the conclusion of the Vedas. The last word in Vedic wisdom, and the author and knower of the Vedanta philosophy is Lord Krishna, and the highest Vedantist is the greatest soul. The great soul takes pleasure in chanting the holy name of the Lord. That is the ultimate purpose of all Vedic wisdom. That's all you got to do, is chant the holy name of the Lord inoffensively. Very easy process. Wherever you are, stani stitashu digatam tanban. But no, Bill, just stay where you are. Don't change your position. Don't have to wear robes or join a society or anything like that. Just stay where you are and chant, just read Bhagavad Gita. And you'll be experiencing so much happiness. You can continue your business, you can continue your studies, whatever. As long as what you're doing is nothing that's vikarmic. Like, obviously, you shouldn't be working in a slaughterhouse. You shouldn't be, selling drugs or anything like that. That's prohibited. So, next verse, which is also another very important verse. Karmanyevadikaraste mafaleshu kadachana ma karma palahetu bur mate sangos vakarmani. Karmani and prescribed duties, eva, certainly, adhikaraha, you have the right, te, of you, ma, never, paleshu, in the fruits, kadachana, at any time, ma, never, karma, pala, in the result of your work, hetuhu, cause, mu, become, ma, never, te, of you, sangaha, attachment, astu, let, there should be a karmani in not doing prescribed duties. Translation, you have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you're not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself the cause of the results of your activities and never be attached to not doing your duty. In other words, we have a specific action that connects us to Krishna, which we talked about before. According to your psychophysical nature, you are either an intellectual, or you're interested in being, you know, a politician, not in America, hopefully, or you're interested in being a soldier, or you're interested in making money, or trade, commerce, cow protection, like that, agriculture, or you're interested in just working with your hands. That is your duty, but you do that duty for Krishna. And, in other words, you're giving the results of your activities. What does it mean to give the results of your activities? Okay. Let's say I'm a businessman. How can I give the results of my activities? Let's say I'm working for Tesla. I'm making cars, you know. So the results of your activities is, well, probably you want to give the car to your favorite guru. Anyway, so, no, but probably you want... You use the fruits. I mean, whatever money you have that's not used to maintain yourself and your family, you help other people understand Krishna. You buy books, you distribute spiritual books, or you help subsidize some of the activities of people who are preaching Krishna consciousness. That is actually what it means. You're not entitled to the fruits of action. You're entitled to use some of the fruits of action just to maintain yourself. Everybody has to maintain themselves. Because this body belongs to Krishna. Everything belongs to Krishna. Ishvashamidam sarva. And then we should not think that we're the cause of the results of our activities. Because sometimes you find people equally talented with equal opportunities, and one person is successful and the one person is not successful. One person becomes poverty-stricken, the other person becomes rich. So there's a Krishna factor behind it. And now we're talking about devotees, not just non-devotees. Non-devotees, it means their karma. So there's also the Krishna factor indirectly. But for devotees, it means Krishna's just put you in a situation that's best for you. He understands if you have too much, like if all of a sudden you're flooded with, you win the lottery, let's say. I'm not saying you should play the lottery, then you may forget him. Because Aishvarya, opulence, is one of the causes of material bewilderment. Whereas other people, they can be given unlimited money and they won't forget Krishna. They'll understand everything belongs to Krishna and they'll use it for Krishna. And they won't buy a mansion with 200 rooms and waste all that money and effort and everything like that. So that's the point. So we shouldn't consider ourselves the cause of the results. In other words, I did well because I'm so intelligent, because I know how to do business. No, we're not the cause. We try our best. Krishna's given us the ability. Krishna's given us the strength. He's given us the intelligence, etc. So Krishna is ultimately the cause. And we should not be attached, finally, to not be doing our duty. In other words, we shouldn't think of renouncing something that's our duty. I mean, I'll give you an example. I was just listening to one girl who was telling about an instruction she got from Prabhupada. When she was young, she had a little baby, and she was, instead of taking care of the baby, she was taking care of the worship in the temple, and she wrote to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, no, your business is to take care of your child. That is your duty. You're the mother. Not to do deity worship. Your duty is child worship, because the child is actually a great devotee of Krishna. Actually, every child's a great devotee of Krishna, but Prabhupada specifically was talking about this child and many devotees' children. He called them Vaikuntha children. Vaikuntha children means children who are spiritual, basically. I mean, the actual meaning of the word means non-anxiety children. But really, you know, what Prabhupada meant implicitly was spiritual children. So we have a duty according to our psychophysical nature, just like Arjuna. Remember, Krishna's addressing Arjuna. You have a right to your duty. It's not yours to enjoy or suffer. No, it's not your business. And you shouldn't give up your duty either. So purport. There are three considerations here: prescribed duties, capricious work, and inaction. So prescribed duties are work according to your own nature. Capricious means, you know, just what I feel like doing today, you know. I don't feel like going to work. Or inaction means not to do anything or giving up prescribed duties. Prescribed duties are activities enjoined in terms of one's acquired modes of material nature. That's, again, acquired modes means psychophysical nature. We all have in our body certain modes of work. Simple as that. And all those modes, whether it's goodness, passion, or ignorance, can be utilized in Krishna's service. Arjuna was using passion in Krishna's service. So it's not that one is necessarily better than that. One type of body is better than another. If your consciousness is in the mode of goodness, that's the important thing. But your body may not be. So there's a disparity many times. But we should put our consciousness in the mode of goodness. And our body, it's not that we put it in ignorance. That would be funny, I mean, sleeping all the time. But we put our body in, we engage our body in the activity according with the mode that it's in. That's all. It doesn't mean you're lesser. It just means you have a particular type of body. I mean, for example, if there's a particular type of car in Europe, it's called a Yugo. It's made in Yugoslavia, as if you couldn't tell. And the Yugo was known and is known for probably being one of the slowest cars in the world. And basically, you almost have to stick your feet through the floorboard like that Flintstones car. You've seen those cartoons. To use it. So you're not going to enter a Yugo in the Daytona 500. You may not know what the Daytona 500 is, but that's one of the big races, the stock car races. So you're going to use it for what it's meant for, you know, going to your farm or whatever you're going to use it for until it breaks down. So we all have different types of bodies. We've talked about this before. Some people are great dancers. And I mentioned this before in a class, but You know, if you ask me to dance or to learn dancing, then it's the two left feet. I think you understand what that expression means. And so everybody can become perfect doing what they do best. This is really what we're talking about. Acquired modes of material nature. Do what you do best, what you can be absorbed in, what you can be happy doing, and do it for Krishna and give the results of Krishna. So capricious work means actions without the sanction of authority. You know, just like whatever you want to do, anytime you want to do, mental platform. And inaction means not performing one's prescribed duties. The Lord advised that Arjuna not be inactive. Double negative. But that he performed his prescribed duty without being attached to the result. Arjuna was thinking of enjoying or the suffering of the result. One who is attached to the result of his work is also the cause of the action. In other words, you get a karma for that. Thus, he is the enjoyer or sufferer of the result of such actions. Very good. See if I can come up with an example. Let's say I am trying to build a temple for Krishna, okay, which is not bad. But if I am personally thinking I am doing it, is my intelligence and everything like that, if it comes out well, then I enjoy it because everyone looks at the temple and says, "What a nice temple!" And I'm internally thinking, they're thinking, "What a nice me." Or if it doesn't, if it's a disaster, then everything they say about the building that didn't come out well, I will take personally as a criticism of me. So if one is detached and just trying to do it as best they can for Krishna, you don't give up the idea of doing something as nicely as you can, then you say, the success is I tried my best for Krishna and I just want to please Krishna, and even if everybody else is not so happy with me. That is life. You can't please all the people all the time. You may not even please some of the people some of the time. Or you may not please anyone any of the time. But you'll still be happy. You know, you all can be concerned about reputation. We talked about that previously. As far as prescribed duties are concerned, they can be fit into three subdivisions. Routine work, you know, what we do ordinarily. Emergency work, that means if there's an emergency, I can do something that's different than my nature. Like if there's a fire in someone's house, I can try to save them and act as a kshatriya. That's emergency work. And desired activities, you know, what I'd like to do. Routine work performed as an obligation in terms of the scriptural injunctions without desired results is actually a mode of goodness. Work with results becomes the cause of bondage. We spoke about that before. Therefore, such work is not auspicious. Everyone has his proprietary right in regard to prescribed duties. You have a right to do and act according to your psychophysical nature. In other words, people should not force you to do something that is not your nature. That's confirmed. You all heard that roar from Krishna, who was outside watching, but should act without attachment to the result. Such disinterested, obligatory duties doubtlessly lead one to the path of liberation. Arjuna was therefore advised by the Lord to fight as a matter of duty without attachment to the result. His non-participation in the battle is another side of attachment. But he was attached to not fighting because he was attached to his own self instead of doing the right thing. Many times we're attached because of our own pleasure, and we don't do the right thing, either spiritually or materially. Just think about that saying, always do the right thing. That's a really deep understanding. Always do the right thing. Such an attachment never leads one to the path of salvation. Any attachment, positive or negative, is a cause for bondage. Either you like something, or you hate it because it's causing you displeasure. Then that keeps you in this world. Bondage. Bond, you know, bond, like being in jail. Inaction is sinful. Therefore, fighting as a matter of duty was the only auspicious path for salvation for Arjuna. Interesting verse. And I think we'll do the next verse, the last verse. Yogastha kuru karmani sangam tikva dananjaya siddhya siddhyo samo bhutva samatvam yoga uchite. Yogastha, equipoise, kuru perform, karmani, your duties, sangam, attachment, tyaktva, giving up, dananjaya, or Arjuna, siddha, asidyaho, in success and failure, sama, equipoise, bhutva, becoming, samatvam, equanimity. Yoga, uchite is called. Perform your duty equipoised. O Arjuna, abandoning all attachment to success or failure, such equanimity is called yoga. Sama, just being equipoised, happiness, distress, dualities of this world. You know, if you're just equipoised, in other words, the mind is equipoised, the consciousness is equipoised, and you don't lose it at any point, then you're a yogi. Krishna tells Arjuna he should act in yoga. And what is that yoga? Yoga means to concentrate the mind upon the Supreme by controlling the ever-disturbing senses. So that's how you become equal poise, because you're concentrating on something beyond, on this world. And who's the Supreme? The Supreme is the Lord. And because he himself is telling Arjuna to fight, Arjuna has nothing to do with the results of the fight. Gain or victory are Krishna's concern. Arjuna is simply advised to act according to the dictation of Krishna. The following of Krishna's dictation is real yoga, and this is practiced in the process called Krishna consciousness. By Krishna consciousness, only can one give up the sense of proprietorship. One has to become the servant of Krishna or the servant of the servant of Krishna. It's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majjhalila, 13th chapter, text 80. That is the right way to discharge duty in Krishna consciousness, which alone can help one act in yoga. Arjuna is a kshatriya, I mentioned that before, someone who likes to protect others. And as such, he is, and that's the motivation for someone being in charge of the government, as a king, president, whatever. Someone who wants to protect the citizens. And who does he consider the citizens? Everyone who's born in the kingdom, including the animals. They're called Prajat, everyone who's part of the kingdom. So he protects the citizens, just like Parikshit Maharaj was a Kshatriya, and there was a cow being and a bull being attacked by this personality named Kali. And Parikshit Maharaj took it as his duty to protect the cow and bull. That is the Kshatriya's business, to always protect. And you protect people sometimes by protecting people from themselves. You know, people sometimes have to be protected from themselves. It's like nowadays, if there is a virus going around, then the government has to institute some health requirements or get free health or free medicine to people who can't afford it. That's part of protection. And, you know, we don't always do that in many countries of the world. There's not that protection by the government, because the government officials in many cases are trying to think of protecting their own, certain part of the body. As such as participating in the Varnashram institution, it's said in the Vishnu Purana that in the Varnashram Dharma, that means one works according to their nature, the whole aim is to satisfy Vishnu, is another name of Krishna. No one should satisfy himself as the rule in the material world, but one should satisfy Krishna. So unless one satisfies Krishna, one cannot correctly observe the principles of Varnashram Dharma. Indirectly, Arjuna was advised to act as Krishna told him. So instead of Krishna just saying, do this, he said, here's the right way to act, and you should do the right way. So things equal the same thing, are equal to each other. So tomorrow we'll go on to text 49, and I guess we can take some questions now. I will take you all off of enforced mute, so you can ask questions. Okay, and who has a question to ask?
I do.
Who is that?
Mother.
That sounds like Tulsi. Speak louder. And you need some, lights on your beautiful face so people can see you.
Yeah, yeah. So how would one deal with the fear that if I surrender to Krishna, I won't be happy, I won't be satisfied, or I'll have to give up my deep attachment to certain material desires?
You could still do those things and do those things in a Krishna conscious way. Well, I mean, we all have different desires in this world. You dovetail your desires in Krishna consciousness. Right? Just like there's Krishna getting angry at you. So you have a desire to have a nice garden. Right? Because I guess by nature you're a gardener.
I can help Tulsi. Yeah.
So you are dovetailing your desires to have a nice garden. So that's the point. We dovetail, the desires are not necessarily bad. They indicate our psychophysical nature. And you use that psychophysical nature. Desires indicate needs. Krishna nowhere says that we should not fulfill our needs. Nowhere does he say that. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that a devotee should fulfill their basic needs in a specific way that's not contrary to spiritual life. All right? And so we all have these needs. And let's say there's a desire. Try to figure out the need behind it. And then your desire is fulfilled. Because you can't really fulfill a desire usually by going after what you think is the object of that desire. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. It's a really important point to understand. Let's say, let me figure out one desire. I guess I don't have any desire. So, years ago, I used to have the desire to go hang gliding. All right, hang gliding. And actually, one time, I was going with one of my disciples in Serbia past a hang gliding place, and he offered to pay for it. He said, well, can I take you hang gliding? And I said, how can we explain it to the devotees if I get hurt? As I can always say that I was jumping too high in kirtan or something like that. Or I was hang gliding because I wanted to carry a big banner behind me saying, chant Hare Krishna and you'll be happy. So I decided not to do it because I understood the need. What was the basic need I had for wanting to go hang gliding? It wasn't hang gliding itself. It was a need for freedom. Okay, to be free. Because if I really wanted to fly through the air, a better alternative would be to take a bird body in my next life. Not such a good idea. So Prabhupada said the surfers will become fish in their next life. He called them sufferers. So to be free, and then I thought, wow, if I want that freedom, real freedom, freedom from attachment is the real freedom, so I can fly high in the air in Krishna consciousness. So once I understood the need behind a specific desire, then I don't really want to go hang gliding anymore. I mean, what's the need? How is it going to help me to go hang gliding? But that time, I was thinking, wow, that would be fun if I could get away with it. But and I wasn't going to spend money because someone else is going to treat me to it. So, anyway, so had I done it, it would have been a frustrating experience. I tell you another time. This is a true story. Another time, I wanted to go to Disney World. Radha Padma will like this one. I wanted to go to Disney World, but I thought, I'm not going to spend Krishna's money. So one day, Jayapataka Maharaj came to me and said, would you like to go with me to Disney World? And I said, if you treat. So he took me to Disney World at his expense. And we went on the rides, and I found that the most frustrating experience of my life, waiting long lines, and the ride was just like, it was like the material world. You have this great expectation of some happiness, and then after that, it doesn't deliver. I mean, you're expecting, you're standing on line, to go, let me think of one ride. Anyway, whatever ride. I don't even remember the rides. It was so boring.
Mad Home.
You know, I was, you know, there was one called The Small World. And, you know, that's the material. I think I was comparing it to the material world. You have great expectations. When I get this, then that'll be it. I will be so happy. When I get a new computer, I will be so happy. And so, when I went to Disney World, I was not so happy. I was bored stiff. And he and I ended up chanting Japa most of the time. I mean, the reason he took me, there was a Krishna conscious reason. It's now that we both, two sannyasis were in Maya one day. But he wanted to see what sort of rides or attractions they could have in Mayapur to bring people to the Holy Ground, because people naturally want to do like material fun things from time to time. And also, there were certain things that were applicable to Mayapur, such as the animatronics exhibits, you know, where they have robots act like human beings. And certainly that can be done. In fact, in our Delhi project, they've done that to a certain extent. If anyone's been to the Delhi temple, they've seen that they have Bhagavad Gita in action with robots changing bodies and everything like that. So anyway, it was a look at technology. It wasn't complete Maya, but I experienced, it was frustrating. That's been my experience of this material energy since the beginning of my life. Whenever I tried something, it didn't fulfill the need because I didn't identify the need, and I simply got more frustrated. So anyway, hope that answers your question. Let someone else ask a question. Someone
That's
else.
Pranam Maharaj.
Oh, there you are. Hare Krishna.
That's it, my humble obeisances. How are you, Maharaj?
Prabhupada, what's up?
Going well. Just met with an accident a few days before.
An accident? What happened?
A bike hit, motorbike cycle hit me just on my back, and I fall down very badly in the city.
Were you on a motorbike when it happened, or just on
no,
the
some,
road?
I'm on the road.
You were walking?
Yeah, I'm walking.
And a motorbike hit you?
Yeah.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
You all right? Did you go to a chiropractor or a doctor?
I don't got the fracture, but my muscles had been badly damaged, contracture on the left side of the spine, shoulder, and the ribs, and the neck. Yeah.
Oh my God, that's horrible. I'll pray that you recover very quickly.
Thanks very much, Maharaj. Thanks very much. Yeah.
Do you have a question?
Yes, Maharaj. I got a question. Maharaj, when we talking about karma kandis, okay, I saw there is a place where I stay in Mumbai. There's a place few hours classic where there's one Shiva temple is there called as Trambakeshwar. And yeah, all the people who are mode of ignorance and mode of the passion as well as the mode of the goodness, they do the karmakandis, like, you know, Pitripaksh or Shukla, a lot of things, ritualistic activities. So does
right.
that activities elevated them to the spirituality or you know, to the next life as a human form of it?
Well, it's beneficial because they're accepting someone greater. I mean, Lord Shiva, of course, is greater than them. They're accepting someone greater than themselves. So it's actually a step up. You know, it's actually a step up. And if they chant Krishna's names, and actually even the name of Lord Shiva is a name of Krishna, ultimately. Shiva means auspicious. So if they chant, and then they'll take human birth in the next life. So it's a step up. It's better that than nothing. To recognize a higher authority, even if it happens to be a demigod, and of course Lord Shiva is more than an ordinary demigod. He's Krishna himself who expands in the material world, the special category. Then there's spiritual advancement. You know, there's advancement of knowledge, at least. So it's better something than nothing. Even in some primitive cultures, you know, they worship different aspects of the material nature, like the sun or the moon. You'll find that in American Indians, for example. And also in South America, they worship the sun, they construct temples of the sun, which happens to be the eye of Krishna. and or the moon or the rain god, like that. And of course that's Indra. In fact, that's why you find in the Rig Veda there's many different hymns to the demigod Indra. So at least they're accepting something better. Even the residents of Vrindavan before Krishna came around, they were doing the Indra Puja.
Okay.
So it's a step up. It's a step up. It, rather than thinking that there's no God, there's no one more powerful, you know, I'm a self-made man, the universe is meant to serve me, as that philosophy goes that many people accept right now, the secret philosophy. It's better to understand there's something superior or someone superior to me. So that's good. I think that shows the natural religious fervor that people have. Of course, people in the 17th chapter of the Gita, Arjuna asks Krishna the question, if someone doesn't follow the Vedas, what type of worship is one doing? Is it in goodness, passion, or ignorance? And Krishna answers that everyone develops their own mode of worship according to the nature they're in if they're not following a transcendental literature like the Vedas. Good question. So one more question before we end. Thank you for the. I hope you feel better. I mean, you look like you're in a lot of pain.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj.
Oh, it's Praneshwara.
Yes. My question is, how to train to mind so only to work on need and must not get frustration, must not regret.
You have to chant hard.
How to focus for the need.
The answer is chant Hare Krishna, be absorbed in Krishna's names. That's the only solution that I know of. Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nishteva, Nishteva, Nishteva. Gatir Anyata. There is no other way, there is no other way, there is no way. Don't look for another solution. All right, we should end now. It is, okay, it's not too late, but I have a lot of things to do, and tomorrow we have, you'll be able to see Mangal Arati at 4:30 my time, and whatever time that is for all of you, you can watch Mangal Arati, you can watch me doing my deity worship at about 5:05 my time, and greeting the deities. I'm not giving the morning class tomorrow, but we'll have our evening class, and we'll see what Krishna wants. Okay. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Bye-bye, everybody.